Kuklia, Palepafos. The archaeological finds from the village of Kuklia, 16 kilometres southwest of Paphos, date from various periods and attest to a continuous settlement spanning almost 5,000 years, from the late Chalcolithic period, around 2800 BC, to the present time. The area was the location of ancient Palepafos, site of a very important sanctuary of Aphrodite, which has been added to UNESCO's cultural heritage list. Let us first travel back through history of Palepafos, focusing on the main portable finds that have come to light, and then allow our mind's eye to roam through the site. The city of Paphos was the seat of the ancient Cypriot kingdom until the 4th century BC, when Cyprus came under the Ptolemies of Egypt, and the administrative centre was relocated to Nea Paphos, situated in the area of the modern city. The kingdom covered a substantial territory in western Cyprus, extending perhaps from the Agamas Peninsula to the hills before Pisuri, and sharing borders with the kingdoms of Kurion to the east and of Marion to the north. Since the late Bronze Age, Paphos had become the urban and administrative centre of that area. The alluvial soil was ideal for the cultivation of grains, which contributed greatly to the economic development, as did the fact that the sanctuary of goddess Aphrodite had turned Palepafos into a major religious centre for centuries. In his Theogony, Hesiod says that the goddess rose from the foam of the sea, a few kilometres southwest of Palepafos, the present-day village of Kuklia. The same information is transmitted by the 1st century AD Spanish-born Roman geographer Pomponius Mela. Kings of the city inherited the title of the goddess's high priest, a function that carried great influence on the island. This is attested by ancient inscriptions referring to the king of Paphos and priest of Anassa. Anassa, meaning lady or queen, was the traditional cult title of the Paphian Aphrodite. The systematic archaeological excavations that began at the end of the 19th century have revealed that Paphos has a unique and uninterrupted history, which started in the Chalcolithic period, the 3rd millennium BC, and continues to date. Indeed, the archaeological finds prove that the worship of the goddess at the sanctuary continued from 1200 BC through the 4th century AD. There's ample evidence of the worship of an oriental deity, the great goddess of fertility, combining different elements. She was initially associated with Astarte, and then subsequent to the arrival of Achaeans from Greece to the island, she was equated with Aphrodite. The fact that the worship of the goddess in the same site dates back to the Chalcolithic period and continues to the end of the 4th century makes the Palepafos sanctuary the longest-lasting in the religious tradition of Cyprus. Several sites have yielded numerous Chalcolithic finds, such as tools and pottery shards. Significant votive objects have also been found in the area around the sanctuary, in the Evreti and Asproi cemeteries in the eastern section of the ancient city. Among those finds are picrolite amulets, an unusual bone amulet representing a male form, as well as a fragment of a votive figurine with a rounded head and muscular arms, similar to the votive figurines found in Chirokitia, Sotira and Erimi. The absence of any finds from the early Bronze Age leads to the conclusion that there was no human habitation in the area during that period. However, there was certainly human presence there in the Middle Bronze Age, that's 1900 to 1650 BC, as evidenced by sparse vessels found in graves, mainly white-painted clay pots, such as the bird-like Ascos, now in the UK's Ashmolean Museum. The multitude of finds dating from the late Bronze Age, 1650 to 1050 BC, attests to the intense human activity in the area. Impressive clay prochi, a plaque from an ivory box, an ivory mirror handle. Golden jewellery bears witness to the fact that Palepafos was one of the biggest economic and art centres of the island, a city with a thriving craft industry and multifaceted relationships with both the West and the East, as corroborated by the wide spectrum of finds. Almost no traces of habitation from that period have come to light, perhaps because the area was densely populated during the Archaic and Classical times. However, wells and pits filled with storage jars attest to the existence of local workshops, producing pottery, fine jewellery and ivory carvings, as well as of copper smelting. There were even iron tools, which first appeared towards the end of the 12th century BC. Imported items found in the area constitute evidence of trade relations with the East, especially Greater Syria and Egypt. The first monumental sacred demenos was erected in the area around 1200 BC, along the standards of Near East open-air sanctuaries. This period is marked by the arrival of the first Achaeans from Greece in Palaepaphos, at the time of the Great Migrations. According to Pausanias, the Temple of Aphrodite was built by Arcadian king Agapenor of Tegea, who was caught in a storm on his return from Troy, and his ship was driven to the shores of Cyprus. Another legend attributes the erection of the sanctuary to Cypriot king Kiniras, father of Adonis, who was renowned for his wealth. Travelling on through time, we see that during the transition to the Iron Age, the city of Palaepaphos presents some peculiar features. Whereas other cities in Cyprus are utterly destroyed and relocated, as was the case of Engomis Salamis, Palaepaphos continues to be uninterruptedly inhabited and retains its privileged position overlooking the coastal plain, as corroborated by funerary finds of the geometric period through the classical period, that's 1050 to 325 BC. Eteandros was the first historically recorded king of Palaepaphos, the biggest urban centre in southwest Cyprus. His name appears with those of other vassal kings in Cyprus on the inscription of the Assyrian king Esarhaddon in 673 to 672 BC. As evidenced by 4th and 5th century coins, the same name was popular with the Sinirads dynasty. In addition to political power, Paphian kings also held the religious capacity of Aphrodite's high priests. On inscriptions in the Cypriot syllabary, they are referred to as King of Paphos and Priest of Anassa. Paphos and other cities in Cyprus rose against Persian rule during the Ionian Revolt, 499 to 4 BC. A historical fact substantiated by archaeologists. The uprising failed, and the island was conquered by the Persians. Herodotus also makes a succinct reference to the assault, whereas other ancient writers describe Paphian kings of that era from the perspective of the classical stereotype of Eastern luxury, as indulging in luxurious living and fanfare. Nicocles, the last king, founded the city and port of Nea Paphos and established it as the new capital around 320 BC. In the war among the successors, he sided with Ptolemy. However, when the rule of the Ptolemies was finally established on the island in 284 BC, all kingdoms were dismantled and Cyprus became a province of the Ptolemaic Kingdom of Egypt. After the founding of Nea Paphos, the old city was renamed Palaepaphos. It was no longer the regional centre of southwest Cyprus, but it assumed the character of a sacred city. The sanctuary was rebuilt during the Roman period, and many private residences were erected in the area, as attested by the discovery of the House of Leda. Furthermore, the large number of amphora handles with impressed decoration found scattered all over the ancient city bears witness to the uninterrupted trade relationships with the Greek world. The fame and magnificence of the sanctuary of Paphos remained undiminished through time. Even in the 1st century AD, geographer Pomponius Mela includes Palaepaphos in the three major cities of Cyprus, together with Salamis and Nea Paphos. During the Roman period, there's intense building activity in the area. The area to the west and south of modern Kuklia is full of Roman ruins which have not yet been systematically studied. To the west of the sanctuary, a peristyle house has been partly excavated, while rescue excavations have brought to light several private Roman residences, preserving mosaic floors in their interiors. Among those mosaics is the impressive representation of Leda and the swan on display at the Kuklia Museum. It is evident, therefore, that Palaepaphos retained its aura and considerable wealth through the late Roman period. This was largely due to the sanctuary of Paphian Aphrodite, a renowned religious centre of the Roman world, attracting visitors from the whole empire. During religious festivals, worshippers wreathed with myrtle took part in ritual processions starting from the port of Nea Paphos and terminating at the Palais Paphos temple with the accompaniment of music. Roman emperors, up to and including Septimius Severus, were patrons of the sanctuary. Titus was very impressed by what he saw when, before being proclaimed emperor, he visited Palais Paphos in 69 AD on his way to Syria. The sanctuary of Aphrodite was rebuilt in late 1st or early 2nd century AD. The new Roman complex comprised edifices dating from various periods, without, however, negating the basic character of the court sanctuary. The large-scale medieval interventions in the area do not allow us to estimate with any accuracy when the sanctuary was destroyed, or to what extent the devastating earthquakes that hit Nea Paphos and Kurion contributed to its decline. The last time the sanctuary of Paphos was mentioned in a written record was in the 4th century AD. In the middle of that century, the cult of Aphrodite was still the target of criticism by Christian writers, such as Julius Firmicus Maternus, around 345 to 350 AD. Obviously, the spread of Christianity did not favour the parallel worship of Aphrodite. Consequently, we can reasonably assume that the cult gradually waned until Emperor Theodosius I outlawed all pagan religions in 391 AD. In his Life of St. Hilarion, St. Hieronymus seems to imply that already in late 4th century AD, the Temple of Aphrodite lay in ruins. Still, habitation in the city continued until the 7th century AD. Oil lamps with the Chi Rho, XR symbol, or the cross, attest to the existence of Christian population. No evidence of habitation has been found dating from the period beyond that point through the 10th century. It seems, therefore, that Palais Paphos declined into an insignificant community. The setup changes again in the 12th century. Palais Paphos, which had been renamed Pouvouklia, flourishes again mainly thanks to the sugar industry. The manor house with its outbuildings on the site of the sanctuary and the installations for the production of sugar at the Stavros locality must have been erected by the Lusignan kings of Cyprus in the 13th century. The manor was the local administration centre and the headquarters of the royal official who ran the profitable sugarcane plantations and the sugar refinery in the district of Paphos. After 1571, the Frankish Kuvuklia fell into Ottoman hands and was transformed into a storage area for wheat and cotton. Travellers mention the rich crops as well as the silk culture of the area. The village is described as an administrative district of the Paphos province. The Lusignan manor house was turned into an administration centre of the Kuklia Chiflik and initially belonged to the Sultan, whereas subsequently it was given to Grand Vizier Kibrisli Mehmet Emin Pasha. Later it came under the ownership of his daughter, and since 1951, following negotiations, it belongs to the government. It was restored and now functions as a museum. Signs of decline appear in the 19th century, when travellers describe Kuklia as a nearly abandoned village, inhabited by very few Greek and Turkish families. Villagers have kept alive the memories of the old pagan religion. Until just a few years ago, young mothers used to light candles on a pillar nearby in honour of Panagia Galatariotissa, the virgin who gives milk to mothers. The pillar stood out on the sanctuary site. Now let us take a virtual tour through the archaeological site and closely observe the monuments. Through the visitor's gate, we enter the site from the north. Passing by the warden's office, we see the ruins of Aphrodite's sanctuary. To the right, along the flagstone-paved path, we see architectural remains of all the periods. Across the path, in the background, stands the Lusignan Manor House with the museum. The sanctuary and its enclosure take up the area from the south side of the village houses to the manor house. Classic-era writers make references to the magnificence of this sanctuary and to its rituals, which were based on ancient customs from the Aegean and the Orient. It was an aniconic worship, that is, the image of the goddess was symbolised by a batil, a conical andesite rock. The batil found on the site is now on display at the Kuklia Museum. The significance of the sacred rock was corroborated by means of Hellenistic clay seals and Roman coins found in the area bearing an image of the Betel between two pillars and under a light canopy, a tripartite shrine. The main altar, where only prayers and pure fire offerings were allowed, was in the open air, but rain never fell on it. The buildings of the sanctuary have undergone many changes and have suffered the ravages of time. In the Middle Ages, the ruins were used as building material, mainly for the construction of the sugar refinery and perhaps for the manor house. The worship lasted more than 1,600 years, in the face of difficulties and destruction. The surviving remains we see on the site comprise two complexes, a south complex, Sanctuary 1 of the Late Bronze Age, and a north one, the Roman Sanctuary 2, erected at the end of the 1st or beginning of the 2nd century AD. Starting from the paved area near the manor house, we see the remains of Sanctuary 1, huge limestone blocks, as well as the southeast and north parts of the enclosure. These remains show that the sanctuary was divided into two sections, an open-air court, the demenos, and a covered hall. The use of the irregular holes in the demenos walls remains as yet undetermined. A shallow basin has been found in the floor of the open-air court, where worshippers perhaps ritually cleansed themselves or deposited their offerings. Between the basin and the hall, there still stands a limestone block which served as the base, either of horns of consecration or of a square capital with stepped sides, similar to the ones on display along the path. It is surmised that there were altars as well, but no traces have been found. The covered hall was the sanctuary's adytum, Holy of Holies. It was an oblong raised edifice with solid walls. The other walls of the sanctuary were of fine ashlar masonry. Along the eastern side and at the centre of the edifice, there is a double row of bases supporting pillars. This sanctuary stands out among the other Cypriot sanctuaries because of its monumental temenos wall and the equally monumental adjacent hypostyle hall. It seems to have been in continuous use until the big earthquake of 76-77 AD. A ritual storage amphora of the 13th or 12th century BC was found in the same place. It is now on display at the Kuklia Museum. The scant Astarte-type votive figurines, that is, female figures with ample breasts, often supported by the hands, bearing Phoenician influence, hark to the earlier fertility cult deriving from the Chalcolithic cult of the goddess of fertility, which was kept alive by the population of the late Cypriot period until settlers from the Aegean altered its character. This is corroborated by the existence of figurines of the goddess with raised arms, most probably imported from Crete in the 11th century BC. The Paphian goddess's title Anassa, maintained through the end of the classical period, also denotes Achaean influence. From that period onwards, the Paphian goddess was represented in accordance with the common imaging standards adopted for Aphrodite in the Greek mainland. Copper and stone sculpted votive offerings must have been numerous as well, whereas an estimated 50 bronze statues must have adorned the uninscribed pedestals, although only a finger has survived. Most marble sculptures must have ended up in kilns, such as the one found in the southwest corner of the North Hall. The Roman Sanctuary too is located beyond the first sanctuary, along its northeast axis, and covers an area measuring 79 by 67 metres. It was designed along the same standards, with an open court, thus maintaining the architectural tradition of the Paphian cult. The scant remains show that it had the shape of the Greek letter pi, with an opening to the west, and combined the eastern and western architectural traditions. It's difficult to imagine what its east wing looked like, since it was replaced by medieval and modern structures. The south stoa was an oblong hall measuring 56 by 10.5 metres, with a mosaic floor surrounded by a raised platform. Only a small part of the mosaic, with elaborate geometric patterns, survives today. Along the central axis, there was a row of Doric columns on square bases, which supported the roof. On the south side, we see the rectangular foundations of a stairway that led to Sanctuary 1. The north stoa was slightly smaller than the south. A significant section of its eastern side lies under a modern house. A part of the sparsely decorated mosaic floor also survives. Both wings served as venues for ritual banquets. Worshippers would rest on the platform during the meals. Similar structures have been found in Pergamos and in the temple of Apollo Hylates at Curium. The massive rectangular pillar standing here was part of the late bronze sanctuary, and it was here that until recently, young mothers from the village used to leave candles in honour of Panagia Galatariotissa. So this was the sanctuary where people worshipped Aphrodite, whom Homer first referred to as Kypris Aphrodite, goddess of Cyprus, in the 8th century BC, and Hesiod subsequently called Aphrodite Kyprogenia, that is, Cyprus-born. Her other titles included Potnia, lady or mistress of Cyprus, Akrea of the hills, of peninsulas, Pontia Enalia, lady of the sea, Urania, heavenly, Pandemos, of all the people, Engeos, armed, Aphrodidos, male Aphrodite, depicted as a bearded man, Adonea, mourning for Adonis, associated with the netherworld, Eleimon, merciful, compassionate, Chrysostephanos, crowned in gold. The Cyprus Tourism Organization, in cooperation with the Department of Antiquities, has created the Aphrodite Cultural Route, hence the two large boards in this archaeological site, providing information regarding this important goddess. Similar boards have been put up in Amathus in Lemesos and Kition in Larnaca, where we've found ruins of sanctuaries devoted to the goddess. Other sites forming part of the route include Nea Paphos, the Lemba Charkodithic settlement, Hieroskipu, formerly the goddess's sacred garden, and Tamasos in the village of Politiko. A part of the trail south of Larnaca Salt Lake is also included in the Aphrodite cultural route, since many plants and seashells are associated with this exceptional goddess. Some of the plants are the wild rose, Rosa canina, the pomegranate, Punica granatum, the oregano, Origanum dictamnus, the narcissus, Narcissus poeticus, the myrtle, Myrtus communis, and the anemone, Anemone coronaria. Some of the seashells associated with Aphrodite belong to the family of Astartidae, Cardidae, Cypridae, and Veneridae. Leaving Sanctuary 2 behind us and crossing over to the other side of the paved path, we see ruins of Roman edifices which must have impressed visitors approaching the island from the sea. The mosaic floor in the patio of a large peristyle house stands out. It's a copy of a representation of Leda and the Swan. We also see the remains of the small 16th century Byzantine chapel of St. Nicholas, which was destroyed 2 centuries later. We now walk towards the manor house. In the 13th century, the Lusignans chose this strategic spot to build the centre of regional administration and control of the sugar industry and of the royal sugarcane plantations. After 1571, the manor was turned into the konak of the Turkish Kuklia Çiftlik. At the beginning of the 20th century, it started falling into disrepair. When it was acquired by the Department of Antiquities, the west, east and north wings were reconstructed and they now house the archaeological museum and its storage rooms. The manor is a massive structure of sandstone blocks with exterior buttresses for better support and a large interior courtyard. The west and south wings serve as storage and ancillary rooms, whereas the east wing is open to the public. The Gothic hall in the basement of the east wing is one of the finest surviving monuments of the Frankish secular architecture on the island. The hall, measuring 27.3 by 6.8 metres, is 5.7 metres high and has 4 consecutive arches with cross vaults, which are reminiscent of the 13th century Gothic style of Burgundy and southern France. It is lighted by 4 small square windows. The East Wing masonry also is impressive, consisting of finely cut stone blocks. The remaining walls are made with local sandstone. On the ground floor, there are 2 spacious halls with flat roofs supported by large beams. The 2 halls communicate via an exterior stone-paved ramp. The floor of the lower hall is adorned with a mosaic from a Roman house which was found in the Alonia locality. Other items on display include finds from the sanctuary of Aphrodite, such as the cone-shaped Batil, a small collection of figurines, a clay tub for the transport of water, and the huge storage amphora with one of the handles decorated in relief. The upper hall houses a chronological display, starting from the left, of various items from Balepaphos, spanning the period from the Chalcolithic era to the Ottoman occupation. Particularly noteworthy are the following: the clay lustral basin in the centre of the hall, the conical clay vessels and the small bithi in the far right, which were used in the sugar refinery, and next to the entrance, the authentic mosaic of Leda and the Swan from the Roman house. The large 6th century BC sarcophagus on the left side of the upper hall is a new and impressive find. It came to light in 2006 in the Kato Alonia locality. It's made of limestone, stands on lion's paw legs, and bears decoration in relief with natural colours. The main face represents a battle scene with Hercules at the centre. It is probably a scene from the first siege of Troy by the Greeks, with the participation of Hercules, Telamon, the king of Salamis in Greece, and the Arcadians. On the other side, there's a scene drawing inspiration from Odyssey Rhapsody 9. It is the scene where Ulysses and his companions escape from the cave of Cyclops Polyphemus, tied to the underbellies of the sheep. The one narrow side portrays a warrior approaching a Cypress and carrying a dead or wounded comrade on his shoulder. Perhaps it is Aias carrying Achilles' body. The other narrow side is a representation of a fight between a lioness and a wild boar. In the same hall, we see the Annunciation in relief, a sample of Cypriot religious art coming from the Panagia Katholiki Church, located to the east of the sanctuary. The courtyard of the manor house serves as a venue for art performances. The main event is dedicated to Aphrodite during the annual Aphrodite Festival, organised by the Hieroskypu municipality and the community council of Kuklia. Usually the performance is a combination of opera, poetry, choral song and ballet. Other important monuments in the area, the Panagia Katholiki Church, the fortifications on the Marcello Hill with the northwest gate of Balepaphos, the late classical royal tomb, the peristyle house at Evreti Arkalou, the Kuklia oil press in the Stilarka locality, and the Lusignan sugar refinery on the coastal plain. The Panagia Katholiki Church is located outside the sanctuary enclosure to the east. It's an important medieval monument, partially enclosed by a wall with pointed arches. The church was built in the 12th or 13th century, and it originally was one of cruciform type with a raised cylindrical dome. The western nave was added in the 16th century. The 15th century murals inside the church are in a very poor state of preservation and are covered by layers of soot. A scene that stands out on the western wall represents the Tigris and Euphrates rivers, depicted as 2 heads disgorging water cascades, thus forming a part of the Garden of Eden on Judgment Day. The church was initially named Panagia Aphroditissa. Then it was renamed Panagia Chrysopolitissa, as confirmed by Sir Henry Luke, and finally became Panagia Katholiki. A pair of perforated monoliths was found at the Stilarka locality between the Xeros and the Arizos rivers, a few kilometres southwest of the Aphrodite sanctuary. The monoliths were of limestone and thus unique among the 50 fenestrated monoliths found thus far in Cyprus. Italian diplomat Luigi Palma di Cesnola, who lived in Cyprus at the end of the 19th century, was the first to wonder about the use of these monoliths. Traveller, writer and naturalist Guillemard was the first to put forth the view that the monoliths were part of the equipment of an oil press. They were used as fulcrums to raise and lower the millstones tied to one end of timber passed through the slits. The millstones would crush the olives to pulp, and the oil would run into a groove and end up in the five reservoirs a little further down the slope. Fragments of black glaze attic pottery found in the same site date back to the late 4th or early 3rd century BC. The Lusignan sugar refinery in the coastal plain is quite remarkable. Sugar production was a profitable industry in the eastern Mediterranean from the 13th to the 16th centuries. It was spread throughout the Mediterranean as a result of the Arab conquests and the Crusades. Thanks to the scientific research of the Swiss-German mission to Kuvuklia, we have extensive information regarding the operation of the refineries. On the sanctuary grounds, there must have been refinery installations which were destroyed. Only traces of the water supply network survived in the courtyard, as well as numerous reservoirs cut in the rock. However, at the Kuklia Stavros locality, 10 minutes to the east, there is one of the few sugar refineries in the Mediterranean and Near East which preserves its basic elements and was in operation from the end of the 13th century through the 16th. The finds show that the mill was powered by the water from the Orites forest springs, which was channeled via the medieval aqueduct. The water entered the mill and turned a horizontal water wheel, which through a system of gear shafts and gear wheels powered the vertical crushing wheel. The cane pulp was decocted and then boiled and purified. The boiled juice was poured into small funnel-shaped pithi or moulds, where small cones of sugar were formed as the juice evaporated, and small drops of juice fell into other vessels on top of which the moulds were placed, forming molasses. Italian engineer Juanello Turiano, 1560, makes reference to this very process in his drawings. The architectural model of these industrial complexes was applied by the Order of the Knights of St. John, who built a sugar factory next to Colossi Castle, and by the Cornaro family in Episcopi. The thousands of moulds and vessels found here evidence the huge sugar production and the serious revenues from its export to the West. Written records state that the Cypriot sugar, in powder form, was the best on the market. Pegolotti, in his manual La Practica della Mercatura, says that Cypriot sugar bore the highest price tag. This, therefore, is the impressive monument of Kuklia, which denotes the uninterrupted worship of Aphrodite, goddess of beauty and love, but also the prosperity of the city kingdom through the ages.